the news.
That lines Iran's president, Ebrahim Raisi, says that Tehran is seeking to join the BRICS group of nations, and China supports the bid. Ukrainian officials say Russia has launched fresh missile strikes across Ukraine amid fierce fighting in the eastern Donbass region. And the air travel sector in Germany is bracing for massive disruptions after a major trade union calls on airport workers to go on strike over pay. Our top story for this half hour, Iran's president says that Tehran and Beijing have agreed to enhance their bilateral cooperation in various fields. Ebrahim Raisi was speaking after concluding a three-day state visit to China.
The visit was made upon an official invitation from Chinese President Xi Jinping. We held several meetings with Xi and other Chinese officials and discussed various issues. The two sides expressed strong determination to enhance cooperation in different fields, including economy, trade, and technology. Many good decisions were taken.
Raisi underlined that the two countries discussed partnership in different regional and international bodies, including the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. He said that China has also supported Tehran's bid to join BRICS, which is an acronym for an alliance of five leading emerging economies, including Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. Iran's president was received by his Chinese counterpart on Tuesday. It was the first such trip by an Iranian president to China in two decades. The two sides ended up signing 20 cooperation agreements. In a joint statement released earlier, it was revealed that Xi Jinping has accepted Raisi's invitation to visit Iran. The two presidents also called for the lifting of U.S. sanctions on Iran and the implementation of the 2015 deal. Political analyst Andrew Loing earlier talked about the significance of Iran's enhancing ties with China and consequently its joining of an organization like BRICS.
Since the Second World War, the whole world has been dominated by one single country, the United States. And this kind of position is changing quite rapidly. Organizations like the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, plus South Africa, has a great deal of connections with the rest of the world. Iran sits at the a very important position in China's Belt and Road Initiative. China's Belt and Road Initiative, especially the economic belt, in other words, the economic connections over land, starting from the western part of China through Central Asia, and then extending all the way through the Middle East, including Iran and Turkey and all the ways to central to Eastern Europe, to Central Europe, all the way to Duisburg, Germany. Of course, Iran is a major energy exporter, in gas and oil and also minerals. And these are very, very important because these are the very things China wants. And China's trade, likewise, with Russia, also very rich in resources. And China is the world's largest energy importer. And, of course, China exports its affordable products, which could improve the lives of the people all around.
Some Western countries have expressed concern over a decision by the Israeli far-right cabinet under Benjamin Netanyahu to push ahead with the settlement construction in the occupied West Bank. The foreign ministers of Britain, France, Germany, Italy, and the U.S. said they were, quote, deeply troubled by Israel's plan. Are such statements going to have any impact on Israeli Hardliners.
Foreign ministers from France, Germany, Italy, and the United Kingdom have followed the United States in denouncing the planned expansion of Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank. In a statement, the ministers said, "We strongly oppose these unilateral actions, which will only serve to exacerbate tensions between Israelis and Palestinians and undermine efforts to achieve a negotiated two-state solution. We continue to support a comprehensive, just, and lasting peace in the Middle East, which must be achieved through direct negotiations between the parties." Norwegian Foreign Minister also condemned Israel's plans, saying the Israeli settlement policy on occupied land is contrary to international law and must be stopped. The Israeli settlement plans have also drawn condemnation from the Arab world. However, Israel's controversial right-wing minister Itamar Ben-Gvir said he wanted to see more Jewish settlements.
"I say to Americans and Europeans, it's so worrying. This is our mission. This is our doctrine. Nine settlements are nice, but it's not enough. We want much more."
The comments fly in the face of international calls for a de-escalation of tensions between Israelis and the Palestinians after months of violence in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds. The international community views the settlements, hundreds of which have been built across the West Bank since Tel Aviv's occupation of the territory in 1967, as illegal under international law and the Geneva Conventions due to their construction on the occupied territories. The UN Security Council has condemned Israel's settlement activities in the occupied territories in several resolutions. Hossein al-Sheikh, a senior Palestinian official, welcomed the joint statement by Western powers condemning Tel Aviv's plan to build more illegal settlements, but said action needed to be taken. In a statement on Twitter, he said, "We demand that words be turned to deeds."
This week, Netanyahu's cabinet unanimously legalized nine settlement outposts and said it would soon approve new units in existing settlements. The newly authorized outposts were set up by settlers without the regime's approval. Now it remains to be seen if the West is serious enough to press Israelis to abide by international law.
Hardliners who oppose Palestinian statehood comprise a large part of Israel's new cabinet, which has put settlement construction at the top of its priorities. Extremist Israeli minister Bezalel Smotrich said about 10,000 new homes are to be approved. Smotrich said he and his allies were committed to removing completely the restrictions on building in the occupied West Bank. Today, between 600,000 and 750,000 Israelis live in these seizable settlements, equivalent to roughly 11% of the total Jewish-Israeli population. The Palestinians seek those territories for a future independent state. Since then, the Tel Aviv regime has openly funded and built settlements for Israeli Jews to live there, offering incentives and subsidized housing. Their statements by the Western powers will likely have little effect on the Israeli hardliners. The regime has never been subjected to real sanctions or accountability. The Israelis have never suffered any pressure, so they keep doing what they're doing. 2022 was the deadliest year for Palestinians in the West Bank since the United Nations started keeping records in 2005. Over 140 Palestinians were killed in the West Bank last year. But already this year, we are only halfway through the second month of 2023, and Israel has already killed around 50 Palestinians in the West Bank. Israel has also regularly bombed Gaza, and now, with a right-wing cabinet in place, the situation is only expected to get worse. Israel's far-right cabinet has approved the legislation for nine settler outposts in the occupied West Bank. All settlements are illegal according to international law, but who pays attention to international law in this occupied land?
Well, the search for a new First Minister of Scotland has begun after Nicola Sturgeon's surprise decision to stand down. The Scottish National Party's National Executive Committee is going to meet to draw up a timetable for a leadership race. This is the party's first leadership contest in nearly 20 years. Sturgeon announced her resignation after nearly 8 years in office and her fiery campaign for Scottish independence. The 52-year-old politician plans to remain in office until her successor is elected. She said, She was exhausted and became too polarized to lead divisive politics effectively. Sturgeon, who became the first woman to lead Scotland, has expressed hope that the new party leader will continue to fight for independence. Sturgeon's push for a new independence referendum was stalled by the UK government. Russia says the US should try to prove it was not behind explosions of the Nord Stream gas pipelines. The Russian embassy to Washington said the blasts along the undersea natural gas pipelines last September were an act of international terrorism. It added that Moscow would not allow the attacks to be swept under the rug. This comes a day after a spokesman for the U.S. State Department called Russian accusations pure disinformation. Moscow is pressing for an international probe after a U.S. investigative journalist alleged Washington to be behind the incident. The White House dismissed the report that showed President Joe Biden had himself directed the attacks. Swedish and Danish investigators have already concluded that the ruptures were likely acts of sabotage, but they could not specify who was responsible. The attacks occurred in exclusive economic zones of the two European countries. Russia has intensified its missile strikes on Ukraine as Kiev's Western allies vow to increase their military aid in defiance of Moscow's warnings. According to Ukrainian officials, Russian missiles hit the country's north and west as well as two central regions. They said that Ukrainian air defenses in the south could intercept only 8-caliber missiles. Earlier, the NATO chief said the alliance's members are ramping up production of artillery munitions to bolster Ukraine's capabilities. That's why Moscow has repeatedly warned against Western arms supplies to Kiev, saying that the move only prolongs the war. Russia launched a military campaign in Ukraine in February last year and blamed it on NATO's eastward expansion. Moscow views the alliance's efforts to make Ukraine a member and deploy missiles close to its borders as a direct threat to Russian security. Air travel in Germany faces massive disruptions as workers at 7 of the country's major airports are planning to go on a 24-hour strike. Fraport, the company that operates Frankfurt Airport, issued a warning urging travelers to avoid the airport on Friday due to the planned walkout. According to the German trade union Verdi, the industrial action is expected to affect domestic travel in particular. It is also expected to cast shadow over the 59th Munich Security Conference, in which diplomats and politicians from across the world are due to take part. The strikers demand a pay rise to cope with rising inflation. Several European countries have been hit by protests and strikes in recent months amid a cost of living crisis fueled by the war in Ukraine and Western sanctions against Russia. Moving now to the U.S. state of Texas, where one person has been killed and three others injured in a shooting at a shopping mall. Police say one suspect has been arrested so far, and they are looking for another possible suspect. Authorities said the area is still an active scene, adding the motive behind the shooting remains unknown. The shopping mall where the incident occurred is next to a store where a gunman killed 23 people in August 2019. The U.S. has been witnessing a major escalation in gun violence and mass shootings during past months. More than 600 mass shootings were recorded across the country during 2022. That's while Congress is still reluctant to pass strict gun control regulations. Hundreds of Rohingya refugees continue to languish in detention centers across India, as One Hour Zaman reports their families are urging authorities to release them on humanitarian grounds.
A little crumbling space filled with dirt and garbage. Rohingya refugee camp on the outskirts of New Delhi is no more than an open prison for the members of the community who face constant threats and intimidation from law enforcement agencies. They say all their activities are being monitored and reported to the local police station on a daily basis. A member of the community is given that task, but that is not the only trouble.
My son was picked up by police along with his wife from outside our shanty 4 months ago. He did not commit any crime. He has been in a detention center for a long time now. I'm worried for him. The UN Refugee Agency says they are working on the case, but nothing has been done so far. He was working as a day laborer in nearby colonies. He did nothing wrong. I humbly urge for his release. We thank God that India gave us shelter, but there is constant fear of detention in the camp.
In recent weeks, the Delhi High Court ordered a joint inspection of the Rohingya Detention Center in New Delhi by officials of concerned agencies over the alleged lack of basic amenities. The court was hearing a plea of a female refugee who is facing bad health conditions due to the lack of basic facilities in the detention center.
My brother recently got married and he was detained just 3 days after his wedding along with his wife. Since then, he's in a detention center. My mother is blind and she cries every day for him. We have been living here for years and we are grateful to India for giving us refugees. I sell vegetables on the streets and similarly other men do menial work, but we are scared now since detention fear is looming across camps.
Most refugees here have heartbreaking tales of the past, and those memories of carnage and exodus are haunting them. Based on official estimates, India is home to some 40,000 Rohingya refugees, but independent reports put the figures at hundreds of thousands. Most of the refugees I spoke with feared that their identity would be disclosed, given the high risk of detention. Scores have also gone into hiding at undisclosed locations across India. They have a horrific tales of separation from their families amid a persistent deportation campaign and an intensified crackdown against the community. Munawar Zaman in the outskirts of New Delhi.
New Zealand has stepped up recovery efforts as the death toll from a severe tropical storm rises to 5. About 100 people remain missing while thousands are displaced, with around 3,000 housing in temporary shelters. The government has deployed choppers to evacuate people, deliver food and fuel to cities cut off by Cyclone Gabriel. Prime Minister Chris Hipkins has warned citizens about a long, grueling recovery ahead as thousands of households remain flooded and without electricity. 4 days of violent winds and lashing rains caused landslides and widespread flooding, prompting the authorities to declare a national state of emergency. With the extent of damage still unfolding, New Zealand has requested Australia's help for disaster response. And representatives of different organizations responsible for managing natural disasters have gathered in the Iranian capital to attend a disaster management event. Salman Kujri reports from Tehran.
Tehran has hosted the first disaster management conference titled Strong Iran. The three-day event has brought together different representatives and experts from various organizations which are responsible for managing natural disasters at the time of crisis. The event is aimed at training responsible organizations to have proper response to natural disasters.
From amongst all elements needed for achieving sustainable development, disaster management is of great importance, and without proper planning in this field, sustainable development will never be achieved in any country. Officials and people should be trained consistently based on the latest global knowledge about natural disasters, and the latest technologies of the world should be utilized in the field of warning and rescue systems.
Meanwhile, Iran's interior minister addressing the event referred to the earthquakes in Iran, Turkey and Syria and said that the country should maintain its readiness more than ever before.
These events are a warning that we must maintain our preparation more than ever in the past, and dealing with natural disasters requires a modern and not a traditional approach, and the dimensions of these events must be controlled with the help of managerial, human, software and equipment skills.
Iran has been a very disaster-prone country throughout its history. Earthquakes, floods, droughts, inversion effects of air pollution in metropolitans have occurred many times, affected millions of people, and have claimed hundreds of thousands of lives during the past century. According to the World Risk Report, Iran is among the countries with high vulnerability in the world. More than 80,000 people have died during the past 30 years in Iran directly by natural disasters.
The main objective of crisis management is to identify and prioritize crisis threats to formulate the best strategy for confronting the most immediate ones. Accordingly, holding such an event provides a good opportunity for officials and people to be prepared at the time of crisis. Salman Kujri, Tehran.
And that's a wrap for now.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints. هدایت میکنه.
It guides us through life.
همه چیز رو تعلیم داده.
It has taught us everything.
باید آموخت. باید فهمید.
We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
و اونگاه پیاده کردن این مفاهیم در واقعیت زندگی است.
And try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من. این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب
Hidden Files.
Well, there's a distinct and qualitative difference between one breaking a law for one's own individual self-interest or violating it in the interests of a class or a people whose oppression is expressed either directly or indirectly through that particular law. Well, the former might be called a criminal, though in many instances he is a victim. But the latter, as a reformist or revolutionary, is interested in universal social change. Captured, he or she is a political prisoner. Well, this is an excerpt from writings by former political prisoner, black revolutionary activist and professor Dr. Angela Davis. Hello, and welcome to Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Well, you heard the definition of who is a political prisoner, according to this philosopher and activist. But the United States denies ever having any political prisoners. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of individuals who've been incarcerated in the U.S. over the decades who would say otherwise. Now, some of them have now died in prison. Some have been released, and others are still incarcerated after being in prison for more than four decades. Well, many of these individuals were involved in revolutionary movements in the 1960s. At the time, most of the activists were teenagers or in their 20s. Imagine that. Now, they say that they were fighting against settler colonialism and oppression. Now, these individuals are elderly in their 60s, 70s, and even 80s. They have endured many decades in prison and have spent much of their time even in solitary confinement. Many of them are ill, and lawyers have petitioned for them to be released on the basis of compassion. However, the U.S. is still adamant about keeping them behind bars. Why?
Why American authorities felt that the Black Panthers were such a threat, and the reason why the U.S. destroyed this group and many other black nationalist groups. What exactly were they demanding? They wanted freedom and the power to determine the destiny of black and oppressed communities. The group believed that self-determination was key to ending their oppression, and they wanted to control the institutions in their communities. The Black Panthers were also seeking full employment for African Americans and other people of color. Due to the fact that black communities had been exploited for hundreds of years, the group wanted an end to the theft by the capitalist system of black people. They believed that the U.S. government was racist and prevented black Americans from excelling. They demanded what was promised to them after slavery, and that was 40 acres of land and 2 mules, or the financial equivalent of it. The Black Panthers wanted decent housing for black people and other minorities, housing which was fit to live in. And the group was also demanding that decent education be provided to black Americans. They wanted what they called true history to be taught, which meant exposing the true nature of American imperialism, as well as teaching the reality of how black Americans had been exploited and how they contributed to society. The Black Panthers were looking at many aspects of life, including health, and they wanted free health care for all black and oppressed people. And they wanted preventive medicine to be practiced in oppressed communities. One of the first demands of the Black Panthers was an end to police brutality and the murder of black people and other oppressed people inside the United States. The Black Panthers were very aware of the connection between their own oppression and the oppression of others. Thus, they wanted an end to all wars of aggression by the United States. They said the goal of these wars was to expand domination and the oppression of people around the world. The organizations wanted the freedom for all black and oppressed people being held in all U.S. prisons. The Panthers felt that to begin with, their incarceration was due to the racist and oppressive system. And they also believed that any trials held for alleged crimes should be done so in front of a jury of peers. To sum it up, what the Black Panthers wanted for their people and others were land, bread, housing, education, clothing, justice, peace, and people's community control of modern technology. Had these demands been met, it would have ensured the liberation, independence, and advancement of the black community in the United States. However, the imperialist capitalist system is not designed to liberate the oppressed, but to gain the ultimate benefit from their oppression.
Well, I would like to welcome a former U.S. political prisoner to Hidden Files, who was incarcerated for 49 years.
Jalil Montarem, former member of the Black Panthers Party, which he joined at 16, and founding member of the Jericho Movement for Political Prisoners. He was incarcerated at age 19, and he was freed at age 69. He spent almost 15 years in prison. He was released in October of 2020. Jalil Montarem established the first revolutionary newspaper from prison and continues to be active. He started from inside prison, a national campaign to recognize political prisoners. He also started a UN petition against the U.S. having political prisoners.
Well, thank you for joining us here at Hidden Files, Mr. Montarem. How do you define a political prisoner?
How do we make these categories and define who they are as a result of their resistance of being dissenters to a system of white supremacy and capitalist imperialism? For us, our comrades are freedom fighters, right? they identify them as being terrorists. Why are they terrorists? Because they're opposing the ideals and the practices of white supremacy and capitalist imperialism. Right? They are trying to alleviate our oppression, right, by any means necessary, as Al-Haj Malik Shabazz has instructed us, by any means necessary. And so therefore they criminalize us, right, and bring us to criminal court in order to charge us what they call criminal offenses, right, on their books, right, in order to protect their interests, protect the state, right? And so this is the reason why they don't want to identify us as political prisoners, because they criminalize our movement. They criminalize our people. They criminalize our movement, right? We've been engaging in war against black people since 1619, all right, if you really want to understand it, all right? When they had the black codes, they had Jim Crow, right? And they have mass incarceration, right? The school-to-prison pipeline, right? It's all criminalizing our lives, right? Our efforts to be actually totally free and emancipated. Right, people. And so that is the reason why they criminalize us, don't want to give us recognition, right, and understanding that there is divisions in this country, right, as a result of white supremacy, capitalist imperialism, past and race divisions in this country, and that there are people grappling with this idea that at some point in time, we have to free ourselves from a system that has been oppressing us for the last 400 years.
Well, from your experience, do you think that political prisoners are treated differently than the average prisoner?
We find that political prisoners are naturally distinguished from the regular general prison population. And the reason why is because they're educated. They're educated and they understand the nature of their relationship to the state. And therefore, they try to remove those individuals from the population because they do not want the general population be educated and understand what is the relationship to the state in regards to being an antagonistic relationship they have with the state, particularly based upon race and class. And so for me, naturally, being an organizer in prison, I haven't been organized outside prison, been organized inside prison, I often was targeted by prison officials to be put in solitary confinement and or have other types of harassments and being deprived of certain privileges that most prisoners get. They would deprive me of that. But the only thing that did make me stronger, made me fight harder, that's all.
Well, do you think that it has been proven to the international community that political prisoners exist in the U.S., though Washington denies it?
Excellent question. You are absolutely correct. The United States does not recognize the fact that they do have political prisoners. When I first put in my, I'll give you an example. When I first submitted my petition campaign to the United Nations, this was back in the late 1970s, early 1980s, I had the opportunity to have a question asked of then UN ambassador to the United Nations by a guy named by the name of Andrew Young, the first black UN ambassador to the United Nations under the presidency of Jimmy Carter. And the question I had asked him by a journalist who was, when he was in Paris having a press conference, was, does political prisoners exist in the United States? And Andrew Young answered in the affirmative, positively, said perhaps thousands. You can Google New York Times, Andrew Young, political prisoners, and all those articles will come up. He was vilified in the press, vilified by the elite for having made that truthful statement, that perhaps thousands of political prisoners in the United States. And he was called to the carpet in the White House and told him to shut that down. Why do they do that? They do that because they don't want the world to know that there is dissent in the United States, right? They project themselves as being the moral humanitarian leader of the world, and that is a false. That's a falsehood, right? They are the greatest harbinger of and progeny of violence in the world. Not my words, those are the words of Dr. Martin Luther King prior to his being assassinated. He said the United States is the greatest progenitor of violence in the world. And we understand that. We know that.
Well, do you see a connection between the oppression of black Americans and the oppression of people worldwide?
One of the things I told the community, international community, that their freedom depends mostly on our freedom, like black people's freedom in the United States. Right, I informed them specifically that when we are free, you will be free. Right? Mm-hmm. Why is that? Because we are in the bastion of white supremacy. You see, and so for us, if this empire, what we call the United States, which is in fact an empire, right, or an octopus, right? You can see the tentacles all over the world, right? Where they're sucking the blood and sucking the resources and sucking the labor from various, particularly mostly people of color countries around the world, all right? Now, those who engage in struggles for national liberation and independence to end colonialism, neocolonialism, oftentimes they'll cut off the tentacles, right, of the octopus, right, and free themselves. But what happens? The tentacles grow back, right? At a period of time, the tentacles grow back, like what happened in Chile and Salvador Allende, right? Mm-hmm. As an example, when Pinochet took over after they freed themselves. And the same thing happened in various other parts of the world. Why is that? Because the head has not been dealt with, the head of the octopus, right? We are in the head of the octopus, okay? So therefore, as long as the head of the octopus maintains itself, right, then they continue to create the conditions from which they can reassert themselves in those struggles, in those moves that were successful at some point in time. All right, so for us, it is imperative that the world know, that the international community, progressive international community, understands that what they're dealing with around the world is white supremacy, capitalist imperialism, but we're in the bastion, we're in the heart of it, right? We're in the belly of the beast. And then for our struggle, ultimately, when we are successful, inshallah, when we are successful, the world will also be free.
Well, fortunately, you are no longer in prison, but can you tell us more about the overall conditions of these prisoners even as we speak?
Imam Jamil Al-Amin, right, who they know is innocent of the crime that he committed, but because of his history of resistance, they had to lock him in the prison system. Right? He's been in ever since, almost 22 years now, right? They know he's innocent. The guy who committed the crime for which he was convicted of confessed, all right? But they hold him in prison because of his politics or who he is as a political person. Another individual is Varan Zambaro, right? This individual was part of the Black Liberation Army, part of the movement back in the days. He did his time, was on his way out the front door, had gotten parole, had received parole on his way out the front door. And Anthony Gonzalez, who was Attorney General of the United States at the time, called the prison and told them, don't release him. He's still in prison today, right? Because of his politics. Not because of anything else he's done on. He did his time. He guaranteed parole, right? And they won't let him go, won't release him. Another individual, of course, is Rochelle McGee. Rochelle McGee is the oldest political prisoner that we have in the United States today, right? And he was involved in the 1970 insurrection, August 1910 insurrection with Jonathan Jackson, George's younger brother, at the Bruin County Courthouse, right? He was found not guilty of shooting and even involved in that incident. Not guilty by the court. The court would not accept that decision from the juror. Would not accept it, right? He's still in prison today. Right? Mumia Abdul-Jamal. We know that he did not commit the crime for which he was committed. He's known around the world as a profound intellect, right? Inside prison and outside of prison, right? They know he was innocent for what he did. They won't let him out of prison. We've had comrades who died in prison on their deathbed, and they won't release him for compassionate release, so they'll be dying at home, right, because of their politics. One particularly, Mutulu Shakur. Right, the stepfather of the great rapper Tupac Shakur, right? He's terminally ill today, right? He asked for compassionate release several times, and they denied him. Probably martial law, he's gonna die in prison. Okay, this is how they treat us, political prisoners and prisoners of war.
Oh, really appreciate you being with us here at Hidden Files, Mr. Jalil Motaki. Now, let's take a closer look at some of the political prisoners that were mentioned by our guests.
Assata Shakur. She is the step-aunt and godmother of late rapper Tupac Shakur and the sister of political prisoner Dr. Mutulu Shakur. She is 75 years old. Under U.S. President Obama's term, not only was she not pardoned, but the bail on her head increased from $1 million to $2 million. Dr. Mutulu Shakur. He is a doctor who specializes in acupuncture. He was very effective in helping people get off of drugs using his method. He was a Black liberation activist. He's also the stepfather of rapper Tupac Shakur. He was charged and convicted for helping his sister Assata escape prison. He was eligible for parole in 2016, and despite being a model prisoner, his release has been denied. Currently, he's suffering from stage 3 bone marrow cancer and he is 71 years old. There have been many requests made for him to be released on humanitarian reasons, but they all have been denied. Ruchel Sink McGee. Ruchel is the oldest political prisoner in the United States. He's 83 years old. He has only lived 16 years outside of prisons. The rest of his life he has spent behind bars. From the beginning, he was convicted of trumped-up charges based on racism. He says slavery 400 years ago and slavery today is the same, just with a new name. Momia Abu-Jamal. Momia Abu-Jamal is an internationally recognized journalist and black liberation activist. He was one of the founding members of the Philadelphia chapter of Black Panthers, and he has been known as the voice of the voiceless for his many years spent writing about issues relating to working-class people of color, prisoners, and the underrepresented. He has written 8 books and countless articles and commentaries from a prison cell on death row in Pennsylvania. He has been incarcerated since 1981. He's 68 years old and suffering from various diseases. Imam Jamil al-Amin. Formerly known as H-Rap Brown, he served as Minister of Justice with the Black Panthers. He is a well-known Muslim leader now and has been in prison since 2000. He remains in jail despite another man admitting to killing the person al-Amin was accused of killing.
Over the years, there have been many political prisoners to die in prison or to be released and to die within days of their release in the United States. There are petitions and movements around the world asking for compassionate releases for these aging revolutionaries. Well, we will continue to follow it up right here and let you know about their latest situation. But for now, I'd like to leave you with this quote from journalist and political prisoner Momia Abu-Jamal. Conventional wisdom would have one believe that it is insane to resist this, the mightiest of empires. But what history really shows is that today's empire is tomorrow's ashes, that nothing lasts forever, and that to not resist is to acquiesce in your own oppression. Well, the greatest form of sanity that anyone can exercise is to resist that force that is trying to repress, oppress, and fight down the human spirit. Until next time, we hope that we hear from you. I'm Marzia Hashimi, and this is Hidden Files.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, brothers and sisters, dear listeners, welcome to Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. I am your host, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi. One of the keys of life is maintaining our mental health. And mental health, first and foremost, begins with the brain. Right. Now, the Ahl al-Bayt alayhim as-salam, they said a person, a mu'min, a believer, needs to maintain the functionality of his intellect because he needs it. Without it, he's nothing. Now, when we look at the hadith, they tell us there are a number of factors that I could indulge myself in and they will have a very bad negative impact, which means I lose my mentality, I lose my sanity, I lose my ability to think and become a person with common sense. I lose all that. Let's look at a number of things that the Ahl al-Bayt touch upon. One is al-ujub, self-conceit. When a person thinks, I am the best thing that God made, I look in the mirror and I see myself and I say, wow, man, you're just beautiful, just handsome, hands down. There's no one like you, right? Or sometimes I have a title in front of my doctor, professor. And you know, when people call me these names, I take a pride in myself, self-conceit. Or sometimes I do actions and acts, and sometimes like acts for the sake of Allah. You can be paying charity, doing good work, and people come and praise you, and then you have this moment of self-conceit. I am good, aren't I? That, the Ahl al-Bayt say, that's a cause for the brain to lose its functionality. Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, he says in a hadith, "Ujub al-mar'i bi nafsihi ahad husad aqla." He says a person's self-conceit is one of the people who are jealous of himself. So you know, when I see a person who has something and I get jealous of them, I make them lose what they have. Like, I'm like, I wish they lose what they have. When a person has that self-conceit in himself, says, oh, wow, I am so good, he's literally trying to get that away from himself. So the Imam says, وَسُيُؤَدِّي إِلَى فَسَادِ عَقْلَهِ. That self-conceit, thinking that you are God's gift to mankind, he said it will make you lose your mind. In the sense, they are no longer being rational and making common sense. So that's a no-go zone. Two, Amir al-Mu'mineen says, مَنْ صَاحَبَ جَاهِلًا نَقَصَ عَقْلُهُ. He who befriends an ignorant person will lose his mind. Now, think of it logically. When a person becomes a friend with an idiot, an ignorant, what is he going to gain from them? Nothing. Rather, when he needs to deal with them, he needs to turn off and switches off his intellect and his mind in order for him to deal with such a friend. So the Imam says, if you have a friend or if you know someone who's ignorant and idiotic and stupid, try to avoid them. Not make them your friends, because they will affect the way you think. They will affect the way you act. They will affect your even akhlaq. Because Imam alayhi salam, he says himself, tell me who your friends are and I'll tell you who you are. If I walk and I have friends and mingle amongst the idiots and ignorant, I'm going to be considered to be one of them. So for the safety of our brains, let us avoid self-conceit and being with ignorant people. Let us take a short break and we'll look at some more factors.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatih al-Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are still listening to the program Mafatih al-Hayat, Keys of Life, coming to you from IRIB English Radio. Some of the factors that makes me lose my mind and the functionality of my mind are mentioned in the hadith of the Ahl Bayt alayhim as-salam. One of the factors that Ahl Bayt alayhim as-salam say, to avoid a person avoids listening to logical people when they give him advice. Now, and this is just a, you know, normal, a common sense thing, that sometimes I want to do something that I feel like something I like, I want to do, I enjoy it, I get a pleasure out of it. And I say to myself, well, obviously my brain is saying, well, hold on, that actually could be harmful. How about you ask someone for advice? I ask someone for an advice and he says to me, oh, you know what? You should not be doing that. And then I say, yeah, I know, but I'm still going to do it. Now, that is just stupid as it gets. Amir al-Mu'mineen, salamullah alayhi, says, a person who asks an intellectual for advice but never applies it is killing his brain. He says, he who leaves and refrains from listening to the advice of the intellectuals, his brain will die. Because if you're not listening to people who are intellectual, then obviously you are not learning anything, are you? Obviously not. So there is this kind of emphasis that I always need to go back and ask people of intellect, ulil albab, those who have brains. One. Again, Amir al-Mu'minin salamullah alayhi says, من غلب عليه الهزل فسد عقله. He who constantly jokes will lose his mind. Because joking all the time and just trying to crack jokes and make fun, obviously you're not thinking anymore. You're not thinking of anything good. You're not developing your brain. You're not developing at least your intellectuality. You're just trying to make people laugh. So you're losing your mind rather than making it grow. So the Imam says, that will corrupt and pollute your mind. He says, fasada aqlu. He uses the word fasad. Fasad is corruption. So think of it like this. Your brain is this bowl of water that is just pure and calm and you can see through. And then all of a sudden you put a drop of ink. And then all of a sudden that water becomes polluted and no longer you can see through it. The Imam says, joking too much will have that effect. It will pollute your mind, so avoid it. Again, he says, من كثر مزاحه استحمق. He who constantly also jokes, he'll become an idiotic person. أحمق means an idiot in Arabic. استحمق is like the extremity, become an extreme form of being an idiot, becomes idiotic. So he just becomes an idiotic person. Why? Because he's constantly joking. Which means no longer a person is logical, no longer rational. Now, sometimes we seem to think that when we're cracking jokes in front of our friends, they're laughing, we get a joy out of it. Okay, but don't overdo it. You know, once or twice, it's required, you know, to keep things flowing, but make sure it doesn't become a part, it doesn't become a habit. You don't turn to be a comedian, right? Because that will definitely affect the intellectuality, that will affect the power of the mind, which we need to keep immaculate all the time. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast, to the field of dreams.
hear the children scream.
That was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.